Hey, this is Rob Unsbach, and welcome back to another edition of E-Heroes for those keeping count. This is episode 409. You know, and I really don't talk about insurance, and I should. And I think it's very important for entrepreneurs to understand their risks and how to protect the community. So I'm bringing on an expert, Sherry Martinen, and we're going to talk about insurance. So thanks for being here, Sherry, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
You know, off air, we are talking about, your years of experience and going back in time and doing everything without a computer, doing everything paper-wise. And I remember those days when I first started my carpet cleaning business back in 1995. And shortly after that, I got a computer because that was a pain in the rear. Times have certainly changed over the years.
They have. I think how we process paperwork has changed, but insurance is still pretty paper heavy. And if you are an entrepreneur and it's your first time or you've done it multiple times, the applications don't seem to be getting shorter. They seem to be getting longer.
Yeah. It's funny because we talked years ago, the whole Paperwork Reduction Act was supposed to, allow us to get away from paper. And if you look on my desk, I got piles and piles of notes. It's like, okay, I'm printing out more paperwork than I ever did before. And yeah, computers are great, but sometimes we do need that physical paper trail.
Yep, I agree.
As I introduced you and we talked about reducing risk and talking about insurance, and like I said, I don't get a lot of people on the show that want to talk openly about insurance because, as I explained off air, I had a carpet cleaning business long ago and insurance, I dealt with insurance companies all the time and I hated them.
I think that was the first thing you said to me when we got on.
They would make my job harder. They would nitpick my invoices. They would take forever to pay. And it just got to the point where it's like, do I want to continue to do business this way? Do I want to continue to wait on payment I may never get? And when I get it, it's not worth the money that I thought it was going to be. And I made that decision. And I said, I'm not dealing with insurance companies anymore. And I'm sure that you get that. I mean, I've talked to insurance reps for years. Some of them are very good at what they do. And some of them should get praise. Some of them should not be in the job that they're in, but I've noticed that what you do, and this is why I have you on the show, is that you're big on education. You're posting stuff on LinkedIn and you got a website that showcases your expertise and why people should trust you.
Thank you. Yeah. I've been in the insurance business for over a decade. I grew up in a family insurance business. I'm a fourth generation insurance agent. My cousins are in insurance. My uncle, my father, my grandmother, my grandfather, my great grandfather. We love insurance. That being said, I know that it's not always easy to work with. It is hard when you're a third party trying to get paid by insurance. I know. I don't know how to make that better. Unfortunately, I'm on the other end of that. I'm on the buying end, which is where the education comes in, because our worst nightmare, and I think everyone's worst nightmare, is that you buy something thinking you're protected, and then when the claim actually happens, you're not, right. Which is unique, right? Most of the time you buy a product and you use it right away. Insurance, you're buying a product hoping you never use it.
Right. But statistically, or you buy a product. Where you buy, and I'm going to use my father-in-law as an example. He passed away a few years ago. Oh. And at the time, back in the 80s, he bought this policy. And he thought this is going to be enough. $5,000 life insurance policy. What does $5,000 do now? Nothing. And when he passed away, my mother-in-law didn't have enough to cover. So my wife and I pitched in and covered the rest. And it wasn't cheap.
That's actually one of the first things I tell all entrepreneurs, especially after COVID. I'm like, look at a life insurance policy. If you're a solopreneur or you own a business, you need a life insurance policy, because if you disappear tomorrow, what is your spouse going to do? What are your children going to do? Like, you are, if you're an entrepreneur, a lot of times, like, you're the one running the business. What happens if you're gone?
Right. Yeah.
Like, and you don't just lose that person, you lose that income, you lose all of the things that they took care of. It's a lot.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter if your spouse is partner in the business. It's still
your life insurance on both of you.
It needs to be on both. And you know, for me, it's I've always been an entrepreneur. I've been doing this for 31 years and owning this company, OnSpark Media, for 25. And I had the carpet cleaning business for 19 years. So we overlapped a few, probably about a decade. And, you know, so I understand there's two sides to every coin. Like you said, you know, you're not on the side where you get a lot of complaints. You're on the side where you're trying to be honest and forthright to people and say, look, this is what you need. Whether you buy it or not, it's really up to you. I'm trying to help you protect yourself and your community. And I think most entrepreneurs only think for themselves. They don't think about the community. They don't think about the legacy. They don't think about, you know, what they're leaving behind.
It's definitely a conversation I feel like a lot of agents have with people. I don't know if people even realize that we're doing it sneakily.
Yeah. You know, and it's not just about, you know, auto. Everybody thinks, oh, you gotta have auto insurance or life. Yeah. It's more than that. I mean, with a business, you gotta have business insurance. So hopefully you know, if you get sued, you have.
I was going to say general liability, like just have something in case you get sued. I mean, you're an entrepreneur and business owner. Have you gotten a letter in the mail before?
When I had the carpet cleaning business, I actually got sued twice. We settled out of court both times only because I didn't feel like dealing with them. They were wrong. I was right. But the amount of time that I would have to go through to go to court, to go get my lawyer involved, to do this, do that.
Yep.
And that was when I decided, yes, insurance is great, but I need to have a guarantee in place. And so with my carpet cleaning business, I had a 200% guarantee. So if you weren't happy with the work, not only would I refund your money, but I would pay another cleaner to come in after us to take care of you. And that eliminated all my problems from that point on.
Yeah. Just like make sure you're doing above and beyond.
Yeah. And even with the marketing company that I have, I do have a guarantee. And I specifically put it out there on the website. And I modeled it kind of like after my cleaning business, that if you're not happy, you know, there's a time frame, like 90 days, because I'm trying to onboard you. I'm trying to get you to understand the concepts and do some of the work. Mm-hmm. If you're not happy, refund your money. Pay another company. I'm losing my voice. Hang on. I pay another company $1,000 to onboard you, because I want people to understand that I'm going to do whatever I can in my power to make sure that you're happy with the work I'm doing. Can I please everyone? No. But in the same respect, I also, you know, am not taking on every single client either. I'm very particular. And I think somewhere along the line, even insurance companies have to be particular.
We are. That's actually the conversation I think you see in the news a lot today. Mm-hmm. I think it's more for homeowners than you've seen than for business owners, but insurance companies are getting pickier. Well, we see it in our area. They're saying like, no, we don't want that property because it's too close to forest or wildfire locations. You see it in Florida or in Louisiana where they're like, nope, we don't want this building or this business because it's either too risky behavior or it's too risky located. The property we see could have damage, things like that. So yeah, it's becoming pickier and pickier in the sense that insurance companies have had billions of dollars in claims and it's happening more frequently. Like we used to have, you know, a hurricane once a decade. Now it's every 2 to 3 years, right? And so after paying out millions and billions of dollars over and over again, they're getting picky. Well, and that means also, it's harder to get insurance sometimes.
You know, also in Florida, they had to deal with a lot of scammy contractors who were, you know, basically ambulance chasers. They'd go after you know, houses as soon as a hurricane happened and say, look, you need a roof, you need this. And then they weren't installing it correctly and insurance companies were paying out millions. So even insurance companies are looking out for licensed contractors. They want, you know, a list. And they do keep that list. They understand, hey, these are great contractors. These are who we want to work with. And you know, I was one of them, but I just could not take dealing with their payment system. Hey, Rob, we're just going to make you wait for another 90 days, 120
days. I know. It's rough.
So how do you overcome some of the misconceptions that people have about insurance?
I think a lot of people just don't even want to deal with it, which is fair. It's kind of a pain. Like, you know, the very first time you probably buy insurance is probably an auto policy. And you're probably young and your parents probably said, hey, we use Joe down the street, walk down the street and figure out what you need. Right. And you walk in and you don't know anything. And you're just like, I need auto insurance. And the agent's like, great. Do you want comprehensive? Do you want collision? Do you want roadside assistance? Do you want glass repair? And you're like, I don't know.
Yeah. And then it was whole life versus term life. And I was like, what?
Yep. And when you're a business owner, it's even more. You're like, wait, I have to buy something now. And then you hire your first person and you're like, wait, I have to buy another insurance policy. And then you get a business auto and you're like,
I need to insure that guy. I don't think
so. Yeah. Like, why do I have to pay like twice as much for a business auto policy? I don't get it. My personal is cheaper. And you're like, it stacks right on top of each other, right? And depending on what industry
I remember when I had the cleaning business, I had hired somebody and the insurance company wanted to know who he was. Mm-hmm. Told him. And you're like, oh no. Oh no. His record is awful. You can't hire him. I said, well, then what? You're going to have to drive and he's going to have to work. And I'm
like, yep.
I don't want to be on the truck.
Yeah. That I think is a sneaky thing that catches a lot of new entrepreneurs, that they'll be like, I'm going to hire this guy to drive my trucks. He's going to go and like do the thing I've been doing. It's going to be great. And then they get the driving report back and the insurance company's like, that guy ain't driving anything.
No.
That is definitely a true life experience that we see quite often. So if you're hiring for a driver, maybe ask them beforehand.
Well, and here's my story. Back in the early 90s, I worked for Coca-Cola and I had to drive those big bay trucks, you know? And so I went in on a Thursday and applied for this position. And they asked me, okay, you're hired. Can you drive stick? I couldn't drive stick, but I needed a job. And I'm like, yes, I can drive stick. And they're like, can you start tomorrow, which would be a Friday? I said, no, but I can start Monday. That weekend, I learned how to drive stick.
It's like, I grew up on a stick. So like, I would have like, honestly been like, yeah, it's fine. But you were probably like, nowadays, I don't even know if that's an issue. But
I still know how to drive stick, but nobody has stick chip vehicles hardly anymore. And the thing is, I've heard that now they're more to insure than a regular automatic.
Probably just because of the parts, just because they wear out because you're manually moving them.
Yeah. And it's weird to me because society has changed over the last 30, 40 years. And, you know, manuals used to be more frequent than automatics. And, you know, and it's like, I said to my dad, I said, you know, I know how to drive stick. My dad never learned. He was in this day and age where I guess the automatic was coming into society and he just learned on that and never wanted to learn on stick.
Oh no, I grew up in the sticks and my dad was like, your first car is going to be a stick. And I was like, great. I think it was also, this is like sneaky insurance stuff because my dad's an insurance agent. I think he purposely also got me a stick knowing that most of my friends couldn't drive one. So then they couldn't drive my vehicle. This is like sneaky insurance stuff.
Yeah. You know, I just jumped on your website and I noticed that you have an ebook called 10 Insurance Myths That Could Cost You Thousands. Can you share some light on that?
Well, you know, okay, hold on. I love that you brought that up. But the real book I want to tell you about is the book that's coming out in September. So I wrote a book, exactly what we're talking about right now, which is nobody wants to talk about insurance, but it's really entertaining. And you should at least have the basics so you understand how to buy insurance better. And it's called Covered. And it's Covered, the Smart Buyer's Guide to Home, Auto, and Business Insurance. And it's coming out on September 15th. I'm super excited. I've been working on it for over a year. I actually visited New York recently with my daughter, and I bought one of those billboards, and I had a picture of myself in my cover, like outside on Times Square. It was definitely one of those like big author moments. I know that you have written multiple books, so maybe you've done that as well.
Yeah, I've never gone to Times Square though.
You should do it. It was so much fun.
I mean, the last couple books were central around Walt Disney World, which is, I like to go there a lot. And so it was marketing the magic and embracing the magic. And it's funny because I get pictures from people all the time. They'll send me these books. Hey, I'm in Animal Kingdom at Disney World, and here's your book. And so then I had somebody a couple years ago send me a picture of one of my books. They were at Mount Everest at base camp. Wow. And so my books have traveled all over the world without me.
The thing is that Mount Everest, like, he had to carry that book up there. That's like extra pack weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my first book came out in 2013, and it was, at the time I still owned the carpet cleaning business, and I was trying to get the marketing company off the ground. It was kind of struggling there after 9/11, because I started the marketing business in 2001, and then a few months later 9/11 hit, and I'm like, so I was helping all these clients in North Carolina, and things just fell apart, you know. So I decided, hey, I'm focused on the local service business, kind of. I'll still do the marketing, but it'll be on the back burner. And then by 2013, because I was so frustrated with social media, I thought, I got to make this simple. I wrote this book called Share, and I had shopped it around to publishers, and everybody wanted these thick technical books. I'm like, yeah, that's not what I'm about. I like to simplify everything. And so I made this 120-page book, and it was just, you know, gave people ways to post, to boost their audience. And I created my own publishing company to get it out there. And in doing so, other people said, hey, Rob, can you help me with my book? Can you do this? Can you do that? It's been 13 years. And it's a bug. 70 plus books later, you know.
Yeah.
And in fact, the last book was my wife's book. It's 25 Days to a Better Marriage. And so we've been married 37 years.
And, congratulations.
You know, it's great having to publish other people's books, but I think it was an honor to help my wife do hers, because to me that was that, you know, she had her all her thoughts that this is what marriage should be. And she laid them out in an easy format, and I added some things. But it was people seem to be embracing the book; they like it. So now she's off writing more books, which is great.
You're like, I've created a writer.
Yeah, yeah. I think she was a writer before I was, but mine was out of necessity. Mm-hmm. Hers was out of generosity.
So that's cool.
And I think your book will help a lot of people, because there are a lot of misconceptions in insurance. A lot of animosity too.
Yeah. What I hear a lot is people are always like, and I mean, everyone gets advertised to this. Everyone's like, it's all on price. Like, I just want the cheapest. I just want the cheapest. I just want the cheapest. But when you buy the cheapest, like I said, when the claim actually happens, sometimes it's fine and everything's covered and you're good. And then other times you get surprised. Mm-hmm. Like really basic ones are like roadside assistance. We get people that call all the time and they're like, well, where's my roadside assistance? And we're like, well, at renewal, you wanted to save the $50 to $100. Mm-hmm. And so you didn't want it.
Right. Well, two years ago, I took 15 people down to Walt Disney World, three cars. My son took his car, and it was him, his girlfriend, his friend, and their little baby. And on our last day on vacation, somebody went through a stop sign, smashed into my son's car. Everybody was fine. However, the car was destroyed. And then we found out that the driver of that car was exempt from the policy, wasn't supposed to be driving. The vehicle was in a trust. The insurance company tried to sue, couldn't get anything. Then my policy had to pay out, and they undervalued my son's car because they based it on Florida prices and not Pennsylvania prices where he bought it. And so we lost about $2,500 on the car. My insurance went up, and they never paid out any of the medical.
So, should have done the medical.
Well, they did get examined on site, and mm-hmm. my granddaughter and my son's girlfriend at the time was taken to the hospital just to get checked out. And those fees were never paid.
That should have been paid. Yeah. Some of this too is like, I know it sounds silly, but claims are chaotic, and you're allowed to push back. Like I know I had a claim due. We lost on my personal home. We had a storage unit, and we had a really bad snow year 1 year, and it literally collapsed due to weight of snow. Mm-hmm. So many collapses happened that they sent out a lot of adjusters from different places like Texas or Florida, not Oregon or California or Washington. And so when he came back with the numbers and said, this is what you should be able to buy to replace, this is how much it should cost. I went to the website where you would buy it. I got a quote and I sent it to him. I was like, you want to try again? Mm-hmm. And I think that's fair to do. And I don't think a lot of people know that you can do it. You're allowed to go back and say, hey, you missed something, or hey, this isn't right. Like the pricing for Florida versus Pennsylvania. Like, I think you could have gone back and said, hey, yeah, in Florida, I could buy a car like that, but I don't live there. Yeah. Just visiting. Yeah. I live up here.
And it was funny because we went back to that same accident in January. So almost 18 months later. And now they have stop signs on all four corners. They, there must have been so many accidents there that Florida finally did something.
I mean, good job to that town.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know where it is, but yeah.
I contacted a lawyer about it, and she's like, yeah, we could fight it. She said, but the guy was exempt. The guy has no assets. The car was in a trust. We could sue the town, but they're usually immune to those types of lawsuits. And I'm like, so it became a very expensive vacation.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but recently though, we consolidated a lot of my kids' insurance is onto my policy and saved a lot of money, and which I'm grateful for. But for almost 2 years, they were on high risk because of their accidents, and a few of them weren't even their fault. But because the insurance had to pay out, that's what it was.
Yeah, and it's normally 2 or 3 years it'll stay on your record. Mm-hmm. If you have a lot of them and they kind of build up, then you'll definitely see it. But ideally, you have an accident once and then it goes away.
Yeah.
You don't have any more accidents. I think what we're seeing a lot now is, especially with auto, is all of the new technology is making it so like the claims are different, but just as expensive. So like a fender bender isn't a fender bender. It's a technical thing now, which I love my backup cameras and I love my like backup detectors. So I can't get too mad, but definitely changed the cost.
The big thing now too, is they have to take into consideration the environmental damage of some of these EVs that are on the road that have accidents, because now you have battery leakage, you have this and you have that, which they don't have in typical gas-powered vehicles. Yes, there's gasoline. Yes, there's antifreeze and some other things. It's just not as dangerous as, you know, that kind of a battery accident. Some of these fire departments are saying that it's now taking 10 times as much water to put out.
Yeah. So this is something that's new. This is new for our industry. And I would say like for towing companies and other companies that handle electric vehicles after accidents, this is a thing. Mm-hmm. So when they get in accidents, they tend to have fire or some sort of, because the battery catches on fire. So if for any reason there's a fire, it is much, much harder to put out. A lot of times it's used with either more water or sand. Mm-hmm. And then they have a higher risk of reignition. So you can't just put it on the back of the truck sometimes. Sometimes you have to kind of like wait there, like heat sand around and make sure that it doesn't reignite. And then you can't just put it with all of the gasoline cars that are broken, because if the battery one catches on fire and then catches all the gasoline ones on fire, then you're in real trouble. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these companies that like the tow companies that are taking these totaled vehicles away are actually having to create entirely separate locations just for the electric vehicles. And sometimes they're parking them in sand or extra dirt to mitigate the chance of explosion or more fire. And it's extra. It's keeping all of that separate and keeping all of it contained. I mean, this is new. I don't know how this will turn out, but all that is added cost. And then that comes back to us too, right? Back to the consumer. I know years ago,
my cousin had a towing company and he had plenty of land on his property. So he created a couple bays and one was dedicated to forensic recovery. And so insurance companies would come, lawyers would come and they would actually go through his lab and look at these cars in more detail. And I mean, he had cameras, he'd have all kinds of stuff. And that's a big thing now. And so insurance companies not only have to insure the vehicle, but there has to be enough money in there that if accidents do happen, that these cars can go through, you know, these forensic examinations. They got to go through legal, they got to go. And so people think, oh, insurance companies are making all kinds of money. But when you look at the big picture, they're probably not making as much as you think.
They have a lot of stats on this. And what I think a lot of people don't realize is that insurance companies make money by state as well. So they go through the state.
Yeah, boo-hoo for Pennsylvania.
I know, right? So they go through the state insurance commissioner. So like they go through Pennsylvania insurance commissioner and say, this is what we'd like to charge for auto insurance based on the claims that have happened and things like that. And the risk that we perceive to be coming up through our actuarial science and things like that, right? Lots of math. And the state gets to say yes or no. Mm-hmm. So in California, this became a really big topic about 2 years ago. The state kept the insurance rates artificially low to keep their constituents happy because they're voted in, right? but it was too low for too long. Yeah. And then large insurers like State Farm and Progressive and all these other really big insurers were like, we can't write business here anymore. Mm-hmm. Like we're leaving. And so the state had to adjust, right? Yeah. But yeah, it's all state by state. And you can find statistics on it based on your state, whether insurance companies made money or lost money year by year. And it is interesting to see, like when you have a large snow event or a large fire event or a hurricane or hail, right? You can see the years where insurance companies didn't make any money. And if it's down for three, they're a business, mm-hmm. right? They're looking around being like, how long can we take a loss?
Right. You know, right? Some of the insurance companies have pulled out of states. They're like, we're not underwriting Florida. We're not underwriting California anymore because the risk is too high.
Yep. Yes, 100%. It's definitely becoming more common. It's an interesting cycle. It's not just like cost and demand. It's that plus all of this legislation and legal and state. It's state by state regulated, making it even more interesting, which is one of the reasons. Okay, I'm going to say it. If you haven't got an agent yet, you should probably use one. I totally understand if you are a very, very, very basic policy, you can go online and buy it just direct. But unless you're reading your policy, which I'm guessing most people aren't, it's hundreds of pages long and it's very dense. Right. I've read them. Most people don't, and that's okay. Like use an agent, use somebody. If it's not me, if you're not like, hey, I want to work with that lady from Oregon, that's okay. But like find someone that you trust and work with them because this is not easy stuff. This is legalese and new things are added all the time.
I want to throw this out too, because in the age of AI, where AI is making things simpler and maybe a policy is cheaper because AI intervened, you still need a real human to understand your needs. AI can never do that. You know, you can input your things and it may ask you basic questions, you know, and it may throw out a rate and it's $500. A real human might be $1,000. But is that $500 difference? You know, I think it's worth it really because they can help you. They're there for you. You know, you have questions, you have problems, you have claims. AI is not going to help you. It really isn't.
And we're seeing this now even in the age of AI. So there's insurance claims happening right now where businesses are using AI to help answer customer questions or help become more efficient. And the AI makes mistakes. Yeah. Who's liable? It's the business. Mm-hmm. And so AI coverage used to be on the general liability policy. They took it off. It's no longer in there. If you want AI coverage, you actually have to ask for a rider. You have to ask for it. It will not be given. Because everyone's trying to cut their costs. And if we just add it on, then everyone gets mad. So like if you're using AI in your business right now to answer customer questions or to do processes that then have an outcome for the customer, consider, is this insured? Because if not, I always tell people, and entrepreneurs pay a couple different ways when we make mistakes. Entrepreneurs pay with our ego because we messed up. And then two, we pay with our wallet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every mistake we make as an entrepreneur, we get hit at least double or triple because you have to deal with it with your time. You got to have your ego and then you got to pay with it with your wallet. So AI, I mean, I think we're all using it at some level, but if you're using it in your business, for your business, to service people, make sure it's covered.
Right. You know, and,
the new ones.
You know, as an entrepreneur, and I'm sure the audience is going to understand this, is that, you know, we do try to save money. Because sometimes, you know, if we don't have added sales, we need to be able to save money on the back end somewhere. Yes. I get it. You know, I've done it too. I've looked at the cheaper insurances and said, you know what, that sounds appealing, but I've been through accidents. I've been through, you know, problems back in, it was 1999, the warehouse that I was renting for my cleaning business. It rained so hard, water just poured through the roof into my showroom and everything was ruined. And yes, I had insurance, but here's the problem. I had $1,000 deductible. The landlord didn't have insurance.
Really?
So, you know, I'm going back and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm paying for this.
Yeah.
What are you paying for?
Yeah. Cause like you're as a business for the, you're paying for the contents and everything inside. So all your showroom pieces that you had, all of like the testers, anything like that, all your computers, your filing,
I had cleaning equipment that, yes, it's designed to clean carpet, but it's not supposed to get wet on the outside.
No, all of that stuff. But like, that's under yours, but the building itself. Yeah. That was your landlord. The building itself should have been.
Oh, and he was just a shady guy. And he was, he went to the hospital, the one, and I'm glad he was still alive to do that. But he was trying to fix his own electrical panel. He was acting as his own contractor. And he zapped himself pretty good trying to fix this electrical panel. He ended up in the hospital for a week and a half. Ooh. And it was that during that time I thought, you know, I can't continue to risk my business staying here. I have to move. You know, if he's going to act as his own contractor, if he's not going to have insurance, if he's not going to, I can't continue to take on that risk. And my insurance company said, look, you have one more accident in this property, we're blacklisting you. Mm-hmm. Now, that was a thing back then. Now, with the age of computers and AI, they already know your information before you even call them. I mean, I called this one company and I said, Rob, okay, you're at 62. And I gave him my address. These are the cars you have. These are the people living in your house. I'm like, but take that one off because they don't live here.
Yeah.
I mean,
that actually happens a lot more than you think. So with technology, they add all the drivers that have been at that address. And we see this a lot with people that rent. They'll be like, wait, I've been paying for the people who used to live here. And we're like, oh, you didn't say anything when we gave you all of the documents. Yeah. You got to read it.
And then, you know, to exempt somebody off your policy sometimes costs more too. And I'm like, wait a minute. So, you know, I'm glad we're having this discussion. I'm glad that you're here to showcase your expertise, because there are a lot of, especially with an entrepreneur who's been in business for 30 plus years, we've seen things, we know things, but we also have in the back of our mind stories that maybe don't jive with the current way insurance actually works, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, when we go to speak to other people, we're relaying on our experience, which is maybe not true anymore. So,
at least think about it. I would just my two cents for everyone is on renewal, review the actual policy. What we see a lot is people start their business and then they buy the policy for that business. Mm-hmm. And then 5 years later, it might look different. Like, you might have added headcount, you might have added services, you might have added vehicles or locations or all of the new equipment. Maybe you added AI. You need to tell your insurance agent in the company, because they're insuring the business you told them about originally. And unless you update it, that's the business that's insured.
And the thing is, I never knew about insuring against AI.
Oh, it's brand new.
Yeah.
Brand new. We're all still learning, right? People say all the time, well, nothing changes with insurance. And I'm like, no, it changes every year.
But I see the headlines with lawyers using AI and getting in trouble. And maybe this was designed for them. But then I look, I'm like, no, everybody's using AI. And
everyone.
And I use AI too. It helps formulate ideas. It helps streamline things. I don't use it as an end result. I use it as a tool.
Yep.
You know, but agreed. A lot of people are using it as the end result. They're letting AI think for themselves and make decisions that ultimately they should be making.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, if you're having AI give advice to your customers, I would be, check out a writer. That's my two cents.
and the thing is, people say, well, Rob, you know, you've written all these books, how many are AI? I said, none of them, you know, but I hyper focus, I write the books, and the first couple of years it was like one a year, and then two a year, then four a year, sometimes more than that. Not all of them are mine. Some of them I produced for other people. You know, but I still go in there and edit. I go in there and straighten things out. I say, look, the flow should go this way. And sometimes I get pushed back. And I say, and I just let the client do what they want to do, because I know the system. I know how, well, at least I know how I write. But everybody else has a different style. And, you know, if they're adamant about the way it should be, I said, fine, leave it your way. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But the client needs to understand that, you know, I was there to advise. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes AI will give you a flow that looks nice, but it doesn't sound nice. It sounds robotic, doesn't have your personality. So, you know, it's same with insurance. And insurance needs to fit you, your personality. Correct. Your
I hear this all style. The time. Yeah. You have everyone has different risk tolerances. Some people have a $10,000 deductible, some people have a $500 deductible, mm-hmm. right? This is a risk tolerance, like what you're comfortable paying. Mm-hmm. Some people have great credit, so they can get lower rates. Other people's credit is so-so. Maybe there's something that happened in their past that made it so it wasn't as strong. Yeah. We've got different zip codes, how close the fire department is. How many times have you been sued? What kind of business are you in? Are you killing rodents with explosives, or are you a marketing manager, right? What kind of job do you have? You were talking about roofing earlier. Is roofing more dangerous than cabinet installation? Maybe.
What I would advise, though, anybody that has a deductible, if you have that money aside, so it's a $500 deductible, $1,000 deductible, take that cash, put it in somewhere that's going to earn you interest. Yeah. In case something ever happens, that money's already there.
Me and my husband call it the oh shit account.
Yeah, because you have to. We live in this. If you've read the statistics, most Americans have a savings under $1,000. They can't afford if an emergency happens. And so, if you have an accident in a car, whether it's your fault or not, and they say, well, you have to pay this deductible, where's it coming from?
Yeah,
you already have it saved now.
You had it saved. You have it in a high yield savings account. You're getting money on that money. Yes.
Yeah. And you know, if after the accident, you've already paid this $1,000, make sure you replenish that account.
Yep.
I just, because you don't want one thing compounding against another and having your stress level so high that you do something stupid. I've seen it.
That's what insurance literally is. It's the financial protection. So instead, it's having a $500 deductible is much more manageable than saying replace your $40,000 car mm-hmm. on your own, right? So that is the entire purpose of it. The entire purpose is to say, let's cut the downside, pay a small bill once a month, so that if something happens to this asset, this $40,000, $60,000, sometimes $100,000 vehicle, you can replace it, continue working, continue living your life, continue building your business for that smaller upfront payment, right? Yeah. So like, yes, that's the entire point.
Well, you know, and I got into a kind of an argument with my insurance company years ago because the way my house is built, you know, my house is built in 1955 and we're the second owners. And the guy who built it was a master mechanic. Real stone on the outside, you know? The wood that's used in this house is solid. It's even hard to drill through. And then when you talk to an insurance company, they say, well, Rob, this is why your insurance price is so high, because the cost to replace, we can't get that material anymore.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Older homes that have like beautiful crowned molding or something that's handmade, that was always handmade mm-hmm. back then, it doesn't exist anymore.
Right. And so they're like, well, you know, Rob, if you bought a newer home, you wouldn't have this problem. This is our.
And you're like, I like my home. I like my home.
Yeah, it's a 6-bedroom house with, you know, and it's like, it's enough room for my kids and my grandkids. And you know, some have moved out, some have moved back in. We had nieces and nephews living here at one time. And it suits, you know. I'm not moving.
And sometimes you got to pay more. You know, it's the Ferrari versus the Honda, right? you got the nice house.
If you're a bad Honda driver, you're going to be paying premiums like you would if you owned a Ferrari.
It's true. That, you know, yes. And I know nobody likes getting tracked, but that is one way to save money on your auto insurance. If you're really like pinching pennies, track your driving.
Well,
it will give you some sort of discount most of the time.
Yeah. Well, and I know that there's trackers for phones.
Yep.
100%. We used one 2 years ago, and my wife hated it because at the time she was taking my daughter to work. And in the parking lot of my daughter's work is a series of speed bumps. Oh. Every time she'd go over those speed bumps, the tracker would alert and it would say that my wife had a bad driving record.
How do we say technology isn't perfect?
No. So it's, and I told her, I said, turn the phone off then when you do that.
You pull into the parking lot, be like, drive complete.
Yeah. And but she had to go all the way around this building. And oh, so gosh. If you drop my daughter off at the front gate, she'd have a mile to walk to get to work.
She's getting her steps in, getting her I'm steps like, in.
You know, so yes, there are situations where, and you can't argue with the app because the app knows virtually nothing, but the fact that you hit something, which was a speed bump. So, you know, we're running out of time, but is there any, you know, last words or where do you want people to go to find you?
Yeah. So you can find me at my website. It's SheriMartinen.com. Yep. It's just literally my name spelled out.com. I'm also on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook. If you want fun insurance tips or ways to help your business, follow me there. I share it all the time. I'm also on YouTube sharing videos again about insurance. And then, like I said, buy the book, go to Amazon. I have it on pre-order right now. It's Covered, The Smart Buyer's Guide to Home, Auto, and Business Insurance. Comes out on September 15th. I'm really excited. I hope that everyone learns a little bit, if nothing else, from this conversation today, so that you can be a better insurance buyer tomorrow and have more of your claims covered in the future. So again, find me, Sheri Martinen. Thank you so much for having me, Rob.
And there you go, everyone. And please go buy her book and be on Amazon. I haven't gotten a chance to read it because it's still on pre-order.
It's pre-order. I know. I'm hitting everybody up though. I want everyone to know about it.
You know, but I think it's something that every entrepreneur needs to know. And it answers a lot of questions that you know, maybe we're just dying inside to know. Like I said, I didn't know anything about this new AI thing, but it's growing. There's a demand for it. And insurance companies know that you know, you may make a mistake in AI and you may get sued over it. Why not?
It's already happening.
Well, insurance, the lawyers are getting sued all the time now because why? I don't understand, but
yeah,
it is what it is. I don't use it in that capacity that I'm going to get sued over, but you know, people are using it for their social media posts. They're using it for this and that and everything else. We live in a litigious world where people are, hey, I'm going to sue you. You got to defend yourself against it. So might as well have the insurance to back it up.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for being here. People go to her website and, you know, I'll have it in the link below. We'll see you guys on the next episode. Adios.
Thank you.